All right, hour two underway on a Friday. It's Nick and Braden hanging out till 12 o'clock. Clark Kellogg, studio analyst, CBS Sports College Hoops, in about, let's call it, I'm going to say 16 minutes and 34 seconds from now. Is that specific enough? I think it is. We'll get to the receiver concern in a moment. Braden and I, during the break, essentially just handled all of John Robinson's offseason issues in about 4 minutes. Seems simple to us, but then again, you know, we're just two bozos on the radio.
Yep.
Let me ask you this. I just saw this Fox Sports coming across the scroll on one of my TVs. Hard Knocks is apparently down to either the Dallas Cowboys or the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't know about you, but I have zero interest in Dallas, and I would be 100% on board to see Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer in Hard Knocks.
Well, so first of all, I am the weirdo that loves it no matter what it is. Like, I'll watch every second. I've watched every second of every Hard Knocks every time it's ever been on television. So I, you know me, like, I'm always like, don't be a sucker. Don't watch, you know,
don't take the bait.
Don't take the bait. Like, there's nothing there. Like, you're not learning anything really about any of these teams. I just am obsessed with watching football practice. I'm just a nerd like that. And so I would watch Dallas just as much as Jacksonville, but you know, you get lots of,
we've learned, like, what's new about Dallas though?
You get lots of Jera though. You get lots of Jera, and Jera's good TV. So I don't know. Dallas is always just a mess. So there's always going to be larger than life stuff going on there. How much, like, what I really, and I don't know how many people feel this way. I personally cannot stand Urban Meyer, the person. Like, I just don't think he's a good dude. He's a phenomenal football coach. I think Trevor Lawrence is a really, really good dude. And it just feels so much like Tebow with Urban Meyer at Florida is what it feels like. And I'm just not sure how much I want to watch that. Maybe it's interesting. You're right. It's there's a lot of drama there. And there's a lot of, like, sort of, you know, moss to the light kind of thing with that. But I just, Urban Meyer just rubs me the wrong way, man. I can't.
Is it possible that Trevor Lawrence is an absolute stud, yet the shelf life on the coach is extremely short? Like, could they actually have success together, yet it be one of those things where Urban is only there for a couple of years? Like, cause I just think he's going to burn out and the health thing is going to come up again. And I don't know that you go to Jacksonville to coach with Trevor Lawrence if you're not going to put in all the time. Like, if he thinks he's going to go in there and do what Spurrier did years ago and not do the grinding work, then he's going to fail and he's going to burn out.
Well, what's funny is you actually have to work harder year round as a college coach because of recruiting. And Urban Meyer was excellent at that at both Florida and Ohio State. So you technically actually work, I think you actually work harder in college as a head coach.
Spurrier just fell in season though.
Spurrier just didn't work hard either way. Like, he just draws up.
Well,
ball
he had
plays.
A tea time booked.
Well, he's just, again, some guys who are those genius level guys, right? Like, they just don't have to work that hard because Spurrier could just drop a play and it was just better than yours. It's like, he could just do that. And that's, you know, guys that just roll out of bed, like, with more pure God given talent than anybody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Meyer's very, very good. I to your point though, biggest difference in college and in the NFL is transparency. You can't keep things from the press in the NFL. Whatever that means, right? Like, we've already learned this. You had to, Chris Doyle is no longer on the staff because you're an idiot. I don't, like, he can't keep that. You have utter and complete power and control in college where you can hide things. You can hide backgrounds. You can hide resumes, conversations, issues, things that happen in your program. You can keep that from everybody. In the NFL, it's all above the table. It's all on the table for everybody to see. And so I'm curious how Urban Meyer, who has made a fortune and a living and a legendary career on questionable character decisions, it's already come back to bite him with the coaching staff. And we know the owner we know Shad Khan wants control of the personnel decisions. Like, I just don't see it working. Trevor Lawrence, like Tebow, might cover up a lot of warts because that's what Tebow did, right? Tebow covered up all the 37 arrests in 3 years. And like, Tebow covered all that up. Maybe Trevor Lawrence can do that. And just being the good golden boy out front and being a great quarterback, maybe that covers all that stuff up. I don't know. I don't think you can do that in the NFL though. Like, people see this stuff. Like, look at Isaiah Wilson, right? Like, you can't, like, Was it Darius Geis, right? Yeah. Who at LSU, multiple sexual assaults, all covered up. Goes to Washington Redskins or the football club, does it again, and Washington cuts him.
Mm-hmm.
This stuff doesn't fly in the NFL.
Nope.
The NFL's like, you're done. They're done with you if you're going to do that stuff. It's not the same as college.
So the wide receiver room for the Tennessee Titans in 2021, we know this franchise had a dry spell at the receiver position for a significant period of time between the mid to late 2000s up until 3-4 years ago. And now the news yesterday, Adam Humphries cut, Corey Davis free agent. Yeah, A.J. Brown's a total stud. We love him. Wide receiver one. He's going to be a multi-time Pro Bowler, you know, probably even an All-Pro at some point in his career if he gets the targets and the stats to merit the voting. But we're going into an offseason where we've got the free agency period coming up, the draft coming up. Yeah, and John, you know, hit a home run in round two years ago. How concerned are you about the actual wide receiver room? Because after A.J. Brown, it's pretty bland.
Yeah, there's no question. And, you know, some of this depends on, are they going to make a real push for Corey Davis? And I just think he's too expensive and wants to be a number one. And that's just, I don't think you can max out a contract and be a number one here. And that's A.J. Brown, you know? So if you can go get Corey Davis and keep him here and figure out a way to make the math work and all that stuff, I think it's you're in great shape. You fill it in with some other smaller pieces around the edges. So that's the number one decision. If he walks, I think it's sort of like the pass rush. You're going to have to address it in two ways, both in free agency and in the draft. I think the wide receiver position, as you've seen in the NFL, you can find extremely good players at that position in the second, third, and fourth round. We've seen it all over the place. Like, just like the guys that Jacksonville has are really talented. Like, that's why everyone's like down on Jacksonville, but Trevor Lawrence is going to have a couple of really good weapons down there with Chark and Chenault. You know, Michael Pittman, really good player for Indianapolis. I want to say he was a right around the time that AJ Brown was picked, right? In that range.
Yeah.
If you tell me you can get Rondale Moore in the second round to come play in the slot with this offense, that's the direction I like. I like getting receivers in the second, third, and fourth round. That's the direction I go.
I like Rondale Moore. We were talking about that during the break. And if you're talking about going draft and free agency, you know, why overpay for a Corey Davis if you can get a Rondale Moore in round two? And then even like a bottom lower tier free agent receiver, like a, you know, a Marvin Jones from the Detroit Lions, who is not going to command anywhere near Corey Davis, certainly nowhere near Juju and Chris Godwin and some of the high priced receivers. Now, the only thing with a guy like Marvin Jones is he's going to give you one good game every 4 weeks, and then he gives you squat for about a 3 week stretch. I mean, if you've ever watched, you know, football around the league and seen Marvin Jones, every 4 or 5 weeks, he goes for $120 and 4 catches and 2 touchdowns. And then he's nowhere to be found for a month. But I would actually take that as a wide receiver too, with AJ and a really good find in round two of the draft.
I mean, Chris Godwin was the 84th overall pick.
Yeah.
Juju Smith-Schuster, I think, was a third round pick, or maybe a high second, middle, late second round pick. Like, again, AJ Brown was something mid 50s, right? Like, you can get very good receivers and find them because there are so many of them today. And this is the same thing as the running back position. These 7-on-7 tournaments have made the wide receiver position, there's just a gluttony of talent because players are more ready to contribute going into the NFL today than ever before at that position. Because now you're in sixth grade running 4,000 routes every summer in a 7-on-7 tournament, and you're doing that every year for 7 years before you even get to being drafted.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think receivers are way more prepared to contribute because they're working on their craft at an earlier age and better and more developed. And every year the receiver position is stronger and stronger and stronger in the draft. And that's why I think you see so many really good players. Like Elijah Moore is a late first round pick, early second round pick, slot guy at Ole Miss, going to be a phenomenal player in the NFL. Like, he's going to be great. Dwayne Eskridge, I know, out of Western Michigan. That's weird to go look at Ole Miss and Western Michigan receivers for the Titans. Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota. Like, there's so many good receivers that are going to be available in that second and third round almost every year now in the draft. I just think that's the way to address it.
615-737-1045, the number, at Nick Kale, at Braden Gall, 440 Sports. hanging out till 12 o'clock today. Clark Kellogg, studio analyst for CBS Sports. He will join us up next on the road to the Final Four. Look, and I don't know. I have no idea if Tennessee is going to make the Final Four, but maybe Clark does. That's why he gets paid the big bucks. He'll join us coming up next here on 104.5 The Zone. All right, welcome back in. Mikhail and Braden Gall here on a Friday. You hear that music. Winter is almost over, and March Madness is right around the corner here on 104.5 The Zone. And when I think of CBS, there's a couple of guys I think of. I think of Nance. I think of Raftery. I think of Kellogg and Gumbel. And we've got one of those four right now. The great Clark Kellogg joining us here, CBS Sports College Basketball Studio Analyst. Clark, we appreciate a couple of minutes on a Friday. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Nick. Braden, great to be with you, man. That music does stir up some positive feelings and a smile on my face. It's been a crazy, crazy, chaotic year, but we are going to get to the finish line, and I'm looking forward to it after missing out on March Madness a year ago, even though there have been disruptions and craziness and uncertainty, and there still will be some, I think, in the days ahead. We do know that we're headed towards Indianapolis and the Indiana region for a Field of 68 tournament, so looking forward to it.
Definitely a great way to characterize Tennessee basketball, Clark. Crazy, yep. Uncertainty. I know you were talking about the big picture, but with the Vols, those adjectives apply as well. I have said for a couple of weeks now that I could see a wide range of possibilities come March for Rick Barnes in Tennessee. I could see being bounced out in the round of 32. I could see if everything materializes, maybe a trip to the Elite Eight. What is your assessment of the Vols and their resume as we head down the stretch here?
Yeah, you know what? I think you're exactly spot on with it, Nick, when you consider, and they won't be the only team that you could categorize that way, quite honestly, as you continue to watch teams across the power conferences, disjointed schedules, pauses, pivoting, injuries and the like. I mean, some of that stuff happens in a normal season, but you amplify all of the different challenges in the midst of this environment. And clearly, I do believe we could see teams fall apart come tournament time and not be their best or anywhere close to it. Or we could see some teams that have kind of gone in fits and starts, had highs and lows, get it all right come tournament time. And I think Tennessee would fall into that category. You know, point guard play has been a little spotty. They've got young, talented guys in the scoring positions on the wings, and that has been promising at times, but they're young. And when you're young, you can't get experience until you do. So all of that factors in. I don't know if Fulkerson has had the kind of senior season he was anticipating or hoping for overall. But all of that, to your point, could perhaps come together. They've shown flashes, clearly. The Vols have had a few dominating performances where you look at them and, wow, this team is legit top 15, top 10 caliber. And then they've had some other ones where you scratch your head and say, wow, this team may be on the bottom side of the top 25. But, again, they're not alone. There are probably, I'd say, six to a dozen teams that will be in the tournament. Seed line will be affected by how they perform the rest of the way. And then how do you build momentum once you do get to the Field of 68? So they'll be one of those teams that I'll have an eye on, like a lot of folks.
It seems like a lot of the SEC kind of falls into that category.
Yeah.
with Alabama. I think Arkansas has got some sneaky good talent. You know, I don't know if you include Florida or LSU into that mix, but sort of Missouri's in that group. Sort of what do you make of the SEC writ large, and are there teams that you like more that are built in a way that are can be successful in March?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You look across the board and nobody has really distinguished themselves in the conference other than Alabama. Clearly Alabama, with the way they've improved defensively, the way they shoot the three, multiple shot makers and playmakers, they keep constant pressure on you at both ends. That's a style that can win, and that's a style that can be problematic come tournament time on quick turnarounds for the opponent. I don't know if Bruner's going to make it back. I haven't seen if he's back yet or not. He would be, if healthy, a really nice piece to add for the Crimson Tide. But nonetheless, they've kind of created a gap. LSU and Florida are interesting. LSU, obviously enigmatic can really score, tremendous talent, and they've shown how good they can be and how average they can be too, because they get a little disinterested defensively. I like Missouri's grit and toughness, and yet they've shown they can struggle scoring at times. They're going to fight you hard and be in games, but when you're in the tournament, I just don't think you can grind your way to advancing beyond maybe one or two games. I mean, you have to at some point have some real efficiency offensively to go beyond the second round. So, yeah, a lot of teams that are fairly pedestrian-looking in the SEC. But, again, you could go to the Pac-12 and find some of those teams, the Big East. I guess the Big Ten and Big 12 would be where you probably find your most heavyweights in terms of teams that look like they're capable of deep tournament runs.
Clark Kellogg, CBS Sports Studio Analyst, joining us here. Nick Hale, Braden Gall, 104.5 The Zone. Clark, one more for me within the conference of the SEC. Right here, just a couple of miles away in our own backyard, is Vanderbilt. And obviously, you know, nobody's expecting anything come postseason tournament time, much less in the conference. But I'm curious to know from afar your perspective on what you've seen from Jerry Stackhouse in a brief period of time. You know, in this state, we've got Penny Hardaway out on the western portion running Memphis, Vanderbilt going with Stackhouse, guys, you know, with that background of the NBA. Your thoughts in general on Stackhouse and also the approach of some of these universities going with the NBA guy to coach at the collegiate ranks?
Yeah, I think it's a natural evolution in some ways. There is a bit of a copycat mentality that exists in across sports, particularly at the higher levels, but when you look at what an NBA player can bring in terms of basketball acumen and knowledge, it's the highest level. And when those guys have actually spent some time coaching, as Jerry did, Juwan had great tutelage under Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra. So when those guys are able to combine their knowledge of having played and cutting their teeth around some outstanding coaches and getting their feet wet there, I think it's a good step out of the norm. And I think these guys will have a chance to be successful. The key is you've got to give them runway. And by that I mean when you hire a new coach, whether he's a former NBA guy or not, you've got to be thinking 6 years, in my mind. I know the time, urgency is accelerated for some, but you've got to be thinking 6 years, because it takes that kind of time to build a culture, to recruit, to work through any bumps you might have and any unexpected circumstances. And in this environment, obviously with COVID, you've even got to add another year and a half to that, in my opinion, or two. So I think both are going to be fine. Penny's got I think he's got the opportunity to have a really strong. I think Jerry's going to be fine. You just got to give him some room. You got to give him some runway. So I would not evaluate him. What I've seen is I've watched Vanderbilt, and I've not watched him a ton, is material and progress being made. And that's what you evaluate coaches on, and then you give them room to see if they can bring it to a higher level of competitiveness. But I've liked what I've seen thus far in the little bit that I've been able to watch him.
I know Belmont lost last night to Eastern Kentucky and ended a lot of streaks for that team, but you know, they obviously probably need to win the OVC tournament to get in. I don't know if that's a good thing or not, because I think they're clearly one of the best 68 teams in America. I think they're a dangerous team that could win. Do you think that the sort of the S-curve of the seeding could actually help teams like Belmont, the mid-major that has had a really dominant year, normally doesn't get the run or the attention? Like, is there going to be any difference in how the tournament committee puts things together that might help like Belmont?
Braden, that is a great, great question. I don't know if I have an answer. Clearly, on paper, it appears as though you might not have some of the heavyweights that typically are part of the field as at-large as get there. And as a result, you have to fill out 68 teams. Many will be there as automatic qualifiers, and the others are at large as 35 to 36 or 7, whatever the number is. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm quite intrigued by how it'll play out. My hope is that there will be stronger consideration, but I feel this way all the time when you have really dominant mid-major conference teams compared to middle of the pack pedestrian power conference teams. My personal bent and bias would be to tilt towards the mid-major dominant team. But again, it's a committee of 10, and they're voting as to who is worthy of those last few at-larges. But I've watched Belmont a couple of times. They're clearly tournament caliber, as I've seen in Western Kentucky, despite the loss at Houston, looks like a tournament team when you look at it on paper. But it's not just what you see with your eyes. It's what the numbers tell you, too. So it's going to be fascinating, really, to see how that at-large pool is filled out in light of where we are currently with some power teams struggling and some really some mid-majors having some outstanding years across the country.
Clark, final one for you, and we appreciate a couple of minutes here on a Friday. You know, you alluded to COVID, and I'm thinking back to the college football season, and we had all this uncertainty, a lot of upsets, a lot of craziness in the schedule. But at the end of the day, when we reached the college football playoff, all was the same again. It was Bama. It was Clemson. It was Ohio State. We've seen the craziness throughout this college basketball season, lots of upsets. At the end of the day, when the dust settles and we reach the Final Four, do you think it'll be very chalk heavy with Gonzaga, Baylor, Michigan, or do you think some of the unpredictability will continue to play out throughout the bracket?
Well, you know, basketball has always been a little different in that there's always a little more room and opportunity for Cinderella and the unpredictability to rise up and make an Elite Eight run or Final Four. We know that, and we also know that the elite teams typically make up a good portion of it. So I'm expecting something chalky this year. And part of that, I say that, Nick and Braden, is because the ability to handle the COVID backdrop and presence in this particular landscape, really, as you look across the country, teams that have experience in terms of some maturity, older players, have fared quite reasonably well in this environment. And when you factor in talent to boot, when you look at Baylor and Gonzaga and Michigan, it's going to be hard for other teams to overcome that combination, the maturity and the talent of those kinds of teams. So I would be surprised if there was a huge outlier that made it to Indianapolis. We'll still have some bumps and upsets along the way, but at the end of the day, I think it'll be fairly chalky once we get to Lucas Oil Stadium for the Final Four.
All right, Clark Kellogg, CBS Sports. Great stuff. Thank you for the time on a Friday. We'll be watching this weekend.
Yep, I'll be locked in. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. Clark Kellogg joining us here. So if I'm reading his last answer correctly, so my Michigan plus 500 bet to win the national championship, it's got a shot. It's got a chance.
Yeah, I just like, give me Gonzaga. You can have everybody else.
Yeah, Gonzaga's, I think, like plus 225, clear favorite. But that's actually still good value, a little over 2-1.
Well, because it's the tournament and the best teams don't always win. But occasionally we get a team that's clearly so dominant in the NCAA tournament. You know, 2012 Kentucky or some of those North Carolina teams or those Duke teams where you're just like, of course these guys are going to be in the championship game. And once they get there, it's pretty rare that they're upset, you know, like Butler doesn't win that game very often, right? Like Villanova needed, that's a team that recruited at a high level and they needed a last second three to beat North Carolina, right?
Yeah.
So I watch Gonzaga play and I just go, oh my God, like who's going to stop these guys? And I think about a Tennessee team, like with a, you know, the lack of size and just true athletic talent. I mean, I know Ponce has got some of that, but you look at the size of a Gonzaga and you just go, how is Tennessee ever going to match up against teams like that? And that's the concern with Tennessee. And frankly, there's more than just that concern, right? Like if you settle for jump shots and you play a good jump shooting mid-major team, Belmont in the first round, you can get beat right away. So the SEC is going to have a strange tournament. It's either going to be incredible and you're going to see Arkansas going to run and Missouri and Bama and Tennessee, or it's going to be really disappointing. I don't think there's a middle ground for the SEC in the tournament this year.
I could totally see like an LSU winning the SEC tournament, just kind of like middle of the road, coming out of nowhere, getting Kentucky. Hot for 4 days. Kentucky, yeah. Like, is there one team in the SEC, maybe short of Vanderbilt, that would not surprise you winning the whole thing for the conference?
Well, and even Vanderbilt, if depending on who's in the on the court, right? I wouldn't be surprised if Vanderbilt won a couple of games, like pulled some upsets or whatever. I don't think they can win the whole thing. Kentucky's the one because of the talent, right? Yeah. Like, Kentucky's the team. They're basically a 500 team in the conference. So you kind of throw out the non-conference schedule when you're looking at how this team is playing, and you know, they're just dangerous, man. They're always going to be dangerous in the tournament. They've got the talent, and they've gotten better as the year's gone along. I think the one I am really intrigued by is Arkansas. Arkansas is intriguing. They've got some pieces that can score, and that's an intriguing team to me.
Yeah, I mean, Scotty Thurman and Corliss Williamson make a great front court for the Razorbacks. You know? Whatever happened to Nolan Richardson, by the way, back when Arkansas was actually good, really good.
I don't know if you need to be asking that.
It's the last time I actually watched Arkansas play basketball for an extended period.
Didn't they just beat Bama?
Yeah, like, I watched that game, but yeah, I only watched it because I had a wager on it. Not that I really cared about Arkansas.
What you just said, when's the last time I watched Arkansas? And it was like 2 days ago.
I'm just keeping track of the score. All right, I got Bama +2. All right, we're in decent shape here. You know, that's kind of the way I observed that game. Yeah, all right, we've got news coming up next segment on the Vols from a basketball standpoint, as well as what's on tap for the weekend. Stay there, Nick Hale, Braden Gall, hanging out for another 20 minutes. Blaine and Mickey, follow us here on 104.5 The Zone.
Coming up this hour.
.45. Welcome back in, Nick Hale, Braden Gall, here on a Friday. Blaine Bishop, Mickey Ryan, in about 15 minutes as we roll into the weekend. Back at it on Monday, and the calendar will be rolled over to the month of March. Thank God. How about this? We'll get to the Vols basketball news in a minute. So we're just coming off of our interview with Clark, and we were talking towards the end there about the SEC tournament coming up. Here are the odds to win the tournament. Alabama, the favorite at +250. So if you are not gambling literate, 2.5 to 1 on your money. Tennessee's the second favorite, Braden, at +350, followed by Missouri +450. And if you like Kentucky, you get 6 to 1 on your money, Braden.
I'm literally pulling up the app as we speak.
I mean, when are you ever going to get Kentucky at 6 to 1 to win the conference?
That's what I'm saying. Like, and we've seen strange things happen. Like, didn't Georgia win that was the year that the Georgia Dome like had a really weird storm, I think, and Georgia had to play like 2 games in a day, and they won the tournament and got in. You know, I was there. I actually interviewed Marshall Henderson after they beat Florida at Bridgestone. I sat next to Marshall Henderson for about 15 minutes, and he is an interesting cat. Mm-hmm. It's been some fun stuff that's happened, but a lot of times there's a lot of blue in that building on Selection Sunday. There's always a lot of blue there. So
Arkansas and LSU +700, Florida +1100, Ole Miss +5000, Mississippi State +10,000, South Carolina and Vanderbilt +15,000, followed by Georgia and Texas A&M. So those are odds to win the SEC, courtesy of the Bovada. Some news, the SEC announcing yesterday that Tennessee-Florida, which was originally scheduled February 10th, was postponed, will be played at TBA on March the 7th. So that is next Sunday. So if you look at it from a schedule standpoint, the Vols will go to Auburn tomorrow, which was supposed to be the regular season finale. Then they'll have about 9 days off, and then they'll take on Florida on March the 7th. And then, of course, the tournament for the conference will start up a day or two later. And I think that's big, because if you want that double bye, I think you got to go 2-0 here.
Yeah. Doesn't it feel like, because again, they've done this every week for like 5 straight weeks. Doesn't it feel like Auburn's going to toast them on Saturday morning? I mean, I don't know why. It just, they've gone 1-1 for like 4 or 5 straight weeks now. They cannot put games together. Nothing about Wednesday night's win over Vanderbilt would build confidence if I was a Tennessee fan. Of course they can beat Auburn by 30, but they can beat almost anybody. It's just what kind of offensive strategy are you going to deploy? Who's going to be making shots? You know, are you settling? And, you know, Auburn, there's some history there, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It just feels like one of those weeks where you go, okay, nice win on Wednesday, probably not going to play well on Saturday. And I know that's like a weird way to analyze it, but that's just how this team has gone for the last month and a half.
No, it's spot on. Auburn expected to be without freshman guard Sharif Cooper on Saturday when Tennessee comes to Auburn. Now, Tennessee is currently slotted in the fifth spot for the SEC tournament. They can finish the regular season as high as number two. So you got to assume you got to beat Auburn. You got to beat Florida. Maybe get some help along the way. But, you know, from a seeding standpoint in the conference, we'll know within the next 9 or 10 days. And then come tournament time, you know, based on what this team does at Bridgestone, you know, this could be anywhere from, I mean, I guess as high as maybe a four at this point. Feels like maybe as high as you're going to get. And then, you know, anywhere from a four to a six.
Do you have to get to the championship game to get to the four seed?
And I would think so.
It also depends on how you finish the regular season, too. I want to say they were a six most of the week this week with, again, just using Joe Lunardi and ESPN and bracketology there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alabama's a two. Tennessee's a five. So, yeah, I mean, if you win a couple, if you go, I'm trying to think what it would, probably 3-1, 4-1, I think you can get up to a four seed.
Yeah. And if you end up a five seed in the tournament, you know what that means, the dreaded 5-12 matchup, which I think everybody, when they print out a bracket, says, I'm just going to take all the 12 seeds, or I'm at least going to take three of the four 12 seeds. That seems to be like the entry-level thing to do. If you have no idea about college basketball, you usually know and you're privy to the information that 12s over fives are a trendy thing to do.
Well, and especially and the play-in team has won a game in the regular tournament. I don't know. A team that's won on those Tuesday, Wednesday games has also come back and won a game, I think, almost every season since the play-in games have been.
Are you intrigued by the play-in games? Like, do you actually sit down and watch those? First of all, do you even know where True TV is?
I can talk into my remote, so I don't need to know. But the 16 seed, no, I don't really ever check that one out. But the year Tennessee went on a big run, I think they played Iowa, I want to say, as like a 12 seed, and they went on a run that year in the NCAA tournament. Because, again, when you get Power 5 teams playing in a 12-12 matchup,
mm-hmm.
that team goes on to win a game almost every year in the tournament. So, you know, I also think teams that are in that 11, 12, 13 range are sort of better as time goes along, right? And, you know, Belmont right now is listed as a 13 seed. I think that's a little low for them. I want to see if they go on a run and finish out the regular season against Moorhead tomorrow and then win the OVC tournament. I'd like to see them seeded higher on 11 or 12 because I think they are deserving of – frankly, I think Belmont is like a 9 seed, actually. Like, I think they're that good. Their resume doesn't indicate that because all the games they had against good teams got canceled basically this year. So – but I think Belmont's good enough to be like a 9 seed. So I wouldn't, you know, if I see Belmont on an 11 line or a 12 line, I'm picking them automatically. Like you said, it's just, they're too good, man. Again, if they get beat in the OVC tournament and they look terrible and Nick Mazinski's not playing, different story.
Mm-hmm.
But if they roll through the tournament, which they could, and Mazinski's healthy and they're back, that's a team I'm automatically picking to win a game.
All right, final note here today on a Friday. Predators back in action, a double dip against the Columbus Blue Jackets Saturday and Sunday. 5 points ahead is Columbus with 21 points. They are 8-8-5 on the year. Not expecting much. Can't say I will consume much of it. But, hey, if they win two in a row, somebody shoot me a text Sunday night and, maybe we'll mention it on Monday. I don't know, maybe. Depends.
It's possible. It's again, I mean, they are teetering on the edge here, right? And either they're going to go on a run and win a bunch of games and get back in playoff conversation, or you're going to start seeing more and more trade rumors. Those are the only two directions this could go. So two big games, 2 o'clock start times, right? Like some matinees. You don't get those back-to-back matinees. You don't get those very often. So see if you can get the kids to actually, my daughter actually gets to watch a game. I don't know if she's going to like what she sees. But the four-year-old loves watching hockey, and she's in bed by 7 o'clock normally. So we love the matinees. We'll see.
Bennett, can you fix our special teams? Yes or no? Daddy needs to know.
Like, what do you think of the 1-3-1 lineup on the power play, honey? Like, what do you think? What's a half wall, Dad?
That's going to do it for us here on a Friday. Our thanks to Clark Kellogg from CBS Sports. Thanks to Ryan Albanese for stepping in for David Reed today. Good stuff, Braden. And We will reconvene next week. Blaine Bishop, Mickey Ryan coming up next. Have a great weekend here on 104.5 The Zone.
Think the season ended.